And welcome to Backstage Pass, a spinoff of the Rock and Roll Survivors podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I'm Kristen, and I'll be talking with music writers, podcasters, photographers, promoters, groupies, and so many others who love rock and roll. So here's your Backstage Pass. Let's get started. Welcome back to the show, Backstage Pass, Lori Kay, and your incredible book, Confessions of a Rock and Roll Name Dropper, My Life Leading Up to John Lennon's Last Interview. And we touched upon that experience on the last episode, and your book opens up with that story, but it also ends with that story. But there's so much in between that I want to get to, most especially your personal biography, because I don't think you can detach your personal life experiences from your professional career experiences. I don't know. I suppose you could say that about anybody, but it is just so clear, crystal clear when you're reading this book. So you touched on the last episode about your dysfunctional mother, but I would like to tease that out a little bit. First of all, you didn't know your father. Am I getting that correct? Or at some point you met him, but you didn't know him as a child. Tell us about that.
I actually never met him. He left my mother when he found out that she was pregnant. In fact, he tried to push her out of a car while he was driving to make sure that she wouldn't have a child. But
they were married and he didn't
they were married.
Wow.
They were married and they had moved from Detroit to Los Angeles, which my mother really wanted to do. And she didn't want to get pregnant at all because she still wanted to be a model and work in the TV business and everything. But unfortunately, she did get pregnant and it soured things with her husband. And he ended up leaving before she had me. And what happened was my grandparents moved out to take care of her because she'd never lived alone in her entire life. And that's how I grew up, basically, until I was almost 6 years old, living with my mother and grandparents. And then my mother moved out with me and ended up getting remarried to a fairly horrible stepfather who was extremely negative and tried to make me feel terrible about desiring to go to college or being intellectual or anything like that. So it was a terrible dysfunctional family upbringing. And from the time I was in elementary school, all I could think about was, when can I run away from home? How can I get out of here the most as possible? And being a SoCal gal, you know, I knew that I had to be very careful with it. And I actually wasn't able to successfully run away until late in high school, even though I tried several times before then. And
Before we get there, I want to tease this out even more, because everything you're telling me, first of all, you're a SoCal gal. I'm a SoCal gal. That means we're Southern California gals. We grew up in Los Angeles. But your grandparents, and the reason why I'm asking you this is, I have my PhD in history, and one of the things I always taught my students is it's not only says who and what's their agenda, because everybody is coming from a certain place, but also geography really matters. And especially in Los Angeles, geography really matters, because even though it's LA, there's these disparate pockets. And so you grew up in Pasadena with your parents. No, where did you grow up with your...
No, not Pasadena. I grew up actually in mid-LA. Not far from where I live now.
Where was the story then? I'm curious, where did the story with, and I don't want to give it away because I want you to tell it, your mom's beautiful white car and what happened to it?
That happened in mid-LA.
That's awful. I don't know why I was thinking Pasadena. That surprises me because mid-LA, it normally is not that anti-Semitic. Tell the story, please, for people who have not read your book yet.
Well, it's a terrible story. What happened was my mother had been given by her father, my grandfather, an incredible 1959 white Chevy Impala, which she loved and I loved. It was just a beautiful car. And one day as she was taking me downstairs before she was off to go to work and she was about to drop me off at my preschool place. We got to the car and it was covered with at least a dozen dead, bleeding rats. And there'd been swastikas just drawn on the car all over in their blood. And we both started screaming and crying because it was obviously anti-Semitic, and it was the first anti-Semitic experience I've ever had, not the only one, but the first. And it was so freaky, and we ran upstairs, both of us crying, and she tried to wash it off, but it didn't come off. It was stained. And then she tried to get the car repainted. And unfortunately, the place that repainted it, Earl Scheib, made a mistake and painted it blue, which my mother was totally freaked out about. And she ended up selling the car. And that's when she decided that we needed to move out of my grandparents' place because it was obviously the wrong place for us to live.
So I guess the reason why I'm confused about where you were is I thought you left your grandparents geographically. They were farther away from you than that close proximity. So you still got to see them after you moved out with your mom?
Absolutely, because my mother refused to babysit. That was one of her dysfunctional abilities. She never babysat or would hire a babysitter. And so she would either leave me alone or tell my grandparents they had to come get me. Or if I had a friend who was available with a mother there, then she would make sure that I was at a friend's house. And that was just the way my mother was.
Well, and if she wasn't able to pawn you off, so to speak, tell us the story. I mean, it's horrible, of you having to lie on the ground in the next room and not make any noise.
Well, my mother's method for babysitting was actually a game that she would play that I referred to all these years later as Jesus on the cross. And what she would do is, if she would want to, for example, sit in our bedroom when we lived with my grandparents and talk on the phone to her girlfriends, she wouldn't want me there because she'd want to be private. So she'd take me into the living room and tell me to lay down on the floor and pretend to nail me on the floor and say, "You can't get up until I come out and pull out these nails. You stay where you are, or," and she threatened that she would be hitting me and, you know, if I tried to get up. So then she would leave me and go in the other room and talk to her girlfriend. And I would be sitting there on the floor sometimes for well over an hour or two and crying. And that's why it was so wonderful when I eventually got my transistor radio with the earplugs, because that gave me something to sing along to and I could handle the floor time better.
What did your grandmother say when she came home and found you on the floor? "Get up, you fool," or something like that?
She was amazed that I would listen to my mother and sit there when it was obviously my ability to get up. But she didn't understand how frightened I was of my mother, because my mother was somebody who not only slapped me as a little kid, but up until junior high, you know, she was a violent woman. And that's something that I have to honestly say that my evil stepfather didn't do. He didn't hit me or make me hurt in that way physically, but my mother always did, until I finally said to her once when I was in junior high, "Are you kidding me? I'm taking phys ed now, and I'm just as strong as you are. So you better not hit me, because you know I can turn around and hit you back." And thankfully, that stopped her.
Well, it was long overdue that it stopped her. And it's just horrible to hear. But, and the reason why I want to talk about this, though, is because your life really did lead you to interviewing John Lennon the day he was murdered. I mean, you can see this passion of yours with music, and you talked about how, in a way, it saved you from everything you were going through. You talked about, I believe in the previous episode, that you slept in the same bed with your mom as a little kid while you were living at your grandparents, and you would listen to your transistor radio. For those who maybe have never listened to a transistor radio, even with an earpiece, you can still hear a little bit. So she was okay enough to let you do this, or she didn't care enough. But this passion of music for you became a lifeline, and from a very early age. So talk a little bit about that, including now your mother gets married and goes into this home with your stepfather. And yes, he may not have physically beat you, but he sure was not kind to you on any loving or mentally supportive way.
Absolutely. And the best thing about him was he had one of those wall-length stereos, and it was so exciting to me. I thought, oh my God, I can have records, I can play them. But of course, he wouldn't let me touch it, and he wouldn't let me buy records. And it was just really frustrating because they didn't have any records I wanted to listen to, even to ask them to play it. He was into jazz and she was into, you know, Frank Sinatra, so there was no point. And finally, I was able to start babysitting and got permission to buy my own records. And eventually, when I saved enough money, I was able to buy myself my own small stereo system. And by then I had my own bedroom. So it was very exciting. I could spend all the time in the world when I wasn't in school or at the library or at a friend's house or with my grandparents. I could listen to all the music I wanted, and it was so great. I was listening to everything from Beatles to Crosby, Stills, and Nash, to Beach Boys, to Leon Russell when I was in high school. And, you know, it was amazing. I just fell in love with so many artists, and all I wanted to do as I listened to the music was talk to these people. It was like, wow, how can I do that? And so that's why I listened to the radio all the time too. By then it was KMET FM, because all the disc jockeys talked about their contacts with musicians and how cool the musicians were. And it just made me that the more interested in being able to interview all these people eventually and meet up with them and certainly see live music. So as soon as I could, I began going to concerts, live music, the more famous, the better. And winning tickets to the Rolling Stones was so incredible that it made my life, and it sent me in the direction that I ended up with in my career.
That's just incredible. Well, thank goodness both your mom and your stepdad let you listen to music. That could have been torturous as well. They could have said, turn it down. As an only child, that was your outlet. And it's interesting, I'm an only child too. And so we all have our outlets as only children. How do we find comfort and friends? And in the interviews I did with Madeline Beccaro, she too was an only child. And she talked about when she discovered Yoko Ono as a kid in a magazine, that Yoko Ono became her imaginary friend until she became her real friend. And I'm thinking about you listening to this incredible music and the LA scene that was going on in the time. This is the 70s, and you're hearing these DJs talk, and you want to be these people, but they were your outlet. They were your imaginary friends before you became friends with these people. And I just... That's great. Go on. I'm sorry.
Well, actually, I wasn't allowed to play my music out loud. I had to wear earphones, which I also bought with babysitting money. And actually, when I was 12 years old, I tended to stop babysitting and I got a job. I lied about my age. So I was actually working and making almost, you know, some decent money for a kid. So that's how I bought concert tickets. That's how I bought earphones, that sort of thing. And when my mother and stepfather were at work, then I played my music really loud. But the minute they came home, it had to be headphones.
Did you ever try out your albums on your stepdad's amazing stereo system?
No, because then I would have had to do it in the living room where it was. And I knew he would kill me, basically, because he would somehow realize whether it was seeing my fingerprints or whatever. And it just made sense that I could stay in my own room and do it. Or I could go to friends' houses, because their parents were exactly the opposite, and I could listen to music really loud there. And plus, they had a lot more albums than I did because their parents bought them for them, which was really cool.
Well, the complete opposite of your stepfather is your friend's father. And forgive me that I'm forgetting his name, but he was so supportive of you as his daughter's friend, including after the murder of John Lennon. I believe you received a call from him telling you how much, or basically expressing his care for you.
He was an amazing man. He's passed away. And he was my friend Jan Holmes' father. She was one of my best friends in high school. And I tell the story at length in my book of how excited I was to get to know him as a junior high kid, because he played guitar and he would listen to music that we listened to and play along with it. And it was just so thrilling. And so it was also thrilling to hear that he knew that I had been the last interviewer with John and Yoko, and he called me after being on the Today Show the next morning. He said he saw me and he was so sorry for me, and he knew how tragic I must feel and everything. And it just made my heart grow so much, because nobody in my family, including my mother, and certainly not my stepfather, ever called me, but he did. And I've always been thrilled about that. And I still love him to this day, even though he's not with us anymore.
I love hearing that you had great people around you, despite your mom and your stepdad. That comforts me, because somewhere you were getting some nurturing that you needed. And I don't mean to keep dwelling on this negative dysfunctional family that you had, but I too come from a dysfunctional family. It's a very, very different version than yours. But as I was reading your book, I kept asking myself, how did you get through all of this? Your inner tenacity, your inner strength is so inspiring. And every excuse in the world would have been understood. You got married too early, you fell into drugs, you didn't have a career, you dropped out of school, you got pregnant. The story could have been so different based upon what you encountered. And I'm wondering where that inner strength came from.
Well, music, basically, because I was so inspired by all the music I heard and by all the artists I was able to see, and to go to a venue and be around music fans who were just as in love with the artist or the venue as much as I was thrilling. And it felt like that was my family, not the people I was actually related to. And a good example of this was my going to the Troubadour for the very first time in West Hollywood. And it was amazing. I looked around at all the people at the table with me, and the look on their faces, I thought, these are the people I'm related to. And that's what made it just incredible for me. And that first show I saw at the Troubadour was Loggins and Messina, which was absolutely incredible. And I was inspired by their music and so much more. And plus, I got to watch a lot of TV with music on it, which was really exciting, including The Monkees Show, which thrilled me. And years later, to meet up with Peter Tork, outside the Santa Monica shopping center and the mall. That was incredible. And to have him flirt with me and invite me to a show that he was doing that night, it was just amazing. So music played a major part of my life from very early on. And the minute I started meeting the live people, it just made me know that that was going to be my career, and that was going to make my life as good as it was ever going to be.
Well, I think this is a fabulous way to close out this particular episode, because I want to pick up on the next episode talking about this moment when you're finally free to leave the house, although I want you to tell everybody how you got yourself a place, even though you were underaged, how you pulled that off, but you were pretty much free. And then you go to college and your music career takes off. It's no longer just, I want to know these people and meet these people and be friends with these people. You are suddenly completely in the thick of it, and it's fabulous. So until the next episode, the book is called Confessions of a Rock and Roll Name Dropper: My Life Leading Up to John Lennon's Last Interview, by Lori Kay. But Lori, tell us also about your book, the audio, this blog where people can hear your interviews with John and George and others.
Well, the amazing thing is, not only did I write the book, and it was released in paperback and ebook on December 8th, 1980, the 43rd anniversary of John Lennon's last day on the planet, but just a lot more recently, I finished self-voicing my audiobook, which I had produced. And it's just amazing, I think, not only because it's my voice, but because so many of the interview quotes and everything that are featured in the book are the actual interview bites from everybody, including George Harrison, Paul McCartney, John Lennon, Ramones, Talking Heads, I mean, on and on. And it was very fun, fulfilling, and thrilling to be able to do that. So I do recommend my audiobook along with the paperback copy. And people can get that everywhere from Amazon to Audible.com to just about every bookstore website. Go online, or you can go to my website for the book, which is Confessions of a Rock and Roll Name Dropper.com. And there's a purchase segment, and you can click on it, and there's links to where you can get it. You can also go to Target.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or you can go to Barnes and Noble stores and a number of other bookstores. So I'm excited to have that option for people to get my book.
It's a fabulous book. It's a page turner. I mean, I really couldn't put it down. Yes, your name dropping is fabulous, by the way. I mean, my jaw was on the floor. And so please, everybody, do yourself a favor. It's the best summer reading ever. So until then, we will pick up.